I wanted to get back to this study on deception this morning. And if you have an outline, we are down on page 29. I am going to finish up the methods of deception today and then also look at the motivations for deception. There's a few few reasons why deceivers like to deceive, and we're going to look at those things. And then we will move on to self-deception, I think is what's coming up next weekend, if I remember right. So anyway, we're down here on point number 12, and we're talking about alcoholic drinks. That is another method of deception. And thank you for your exhortation this morning, Austin, concerning that, based on the passage that I read there in Proverbs 23. I guess I'll probably make a few comments on your comments, or reference your comments when we get there here in a minute. Good examples, or bad examples, or however you want to look at it. Yeah. Yes. So anyway, deception can be accomplished by using alcoholic drinks. Proverbs 20 and verse 1. Proverbs 21 says, "Wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise." Okay? So this verse here shows us the evils of overconsumption of alcohol. Now, there are teetotalers out there that like to go to verses like this and just say all alcohol is bad. And, of course, you have to compare Scripture with Scripture, and you can't just go to this one verse and to the exclusion of other verses, which says to have a little wine for thy stomach's sake, and thine often infirmities, like Paul told Timothy, and so on. So it's not wine in and of itself that is evil. It is the overconsumption of wine, because the Bible also says wine cheereth the heart of God and man. So obviously wine itself is not evil. Jesus drank wine. That's why they called him a wine bibber. Falsely so called. He was not a bibber, but he did drink wine. But the point is here, wine is deceiving, and you have to be very careful with it. Beer, hard liquor, all those alcoholic drinks. It is a mocker. It is raging. And if you are deceived by it, you're not wise. And the fact that you can be deceived by it means that there is something underneath the surface of it that's not obviously apparent. When you take that first drink, it doesn't seem like a big deal. You have that first beer, not a big deal. And then people that are not wise say, yeah, I'll have another one. And they have another one. And maybe they're, you know, they're getting to feel a little bit, you know, their face is getting a little bit flush. Maybe they're, you know, their lips are starting to tingle a little bit. But, you know, I'm having a good time. No big deal. I'm not drunk or anything. I'll have a third one. And before you know it, then it starts to creep up on you, and then you end up getting into drunkenness, and that's why wine is deceitful, because it just starts out with a little bit, and then a little bit more, and before you know it, it stings like an adder. It strikes like a snake, and we'll talk about that here in Proverbs chapter 23. And that's one thing, just to give you a practical bit of advice here, and this would be especially important for younger people, which we don't really have any here this morning, but for anybody, you want to settle it in your mind ahead of time, like right now or whenever, before you ever take another drink, to say, I will only have X amount of drinks and no more, ever, right? And then when you make up your mind now, then when the time comes, when you've had one and you've already said, I will only have one, then you know where your limit is. Or if you say, I'll only have two, right? Then you know where your limit is. And then after you've had the second one, you are already principled to say, nope, I will not have another one, rather than saying, well, you know, I'm okay. I'm feeling all right, you know, before you know a third one, fourth one, and then you're drunk, right? So you settle it now, and you have to understand your own body, because some people have different tolerances for alcohol. For me, it's one. I don't have more than one. I can't have more than one. More than one would get me to leading to drunkenness anyway, and I won't go there. Some people can have more than one, but I'd say if you're somebody that can have three or four or six, then you're an alcoholic, right? And you need to stop drinking, because you've built up way too much of a tolerance. So anyway, settle it in your minds what you'll have, and then stick to that principle. But when alcohol is consumed for too long, like I made reference to, it will bite you like a snake hiding in the grass. Look at Proverbs chapter 23, verses 30 through 32. Says, they that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine, look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth his color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright, at the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Remember how wine is deceitful? Well, how do serpents operate? With craft, with guile, right? They're low in the grass. You can't see them. They sneak up on their prey. They're very quiet. And then they strike, right? And you're not expecting it. And that's what happens with overconsumption of alcohol. All of a sudden, you realize that, whoa, I'm drunk. And then it's too late, especially if you're a Christian, because then you're in a position where if it's publicly known, you're going to be out of the church. And you definitely don't want to go there. Alcohol will, overindulgence of it, will trick you into doing a whole bunch of stupid things. And Austin talked to us about some of those things this morning. It'll trick you into getting into arguments that you wouldn't normally get into. Verse 29, who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? Who hath contentions? He told us the story about the idiot that got into a fight with a guy that got his head slammed into a floor, right? He got into a contention that he wouldn't probably normally have gotten into, especially with a guy a lot bigger than he was, if he wouldn't have had alcohol, right? He had beer muscles, and he found out that they weren't as big as real muscles. So you want to be careful about that. How many people, how many arguments, how much strife is caused by people that have had too much to drink? It'll deceive you into thinking that you're tougher than you are and consequently getting beat up, just like Austin showed us there. Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? We've all seen, probably you've seen drunk people with bloodshot eyes, right? The scripture is so accurate how it describes this. Who hath babbling? Of course, it's going to make you say stupid things, things that you normally wouldn't say. You normally have enough sense to keep your mouth shut, but there's no inhibition. There's no filter there. You just say whatever comes up. Whatever comes up comes out. It'll trick you into looking at women that you wouldn't normally look at and saying things that you normally wouldn't say. Verse 33, thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. They call them beer goggles, right? You would, a guy that normally wouldn't be interested in a certain type of woman all of a sudden gets interested in her whenever he's had too much to drink. Beholding strange women and then uttering perverse things. It's shameful, the things that people say when they're drunk. And a lot of times when you've had enough to drink, you don't even remember it. You don't remember saying it. You don't remember doing it. People have blackouts when they do that. It's a disgusting thing. And then it'll deceive you into thinking that the same thing's not going to happen the next time you do the same stupid thing over again, right? Isn't that what drunk people do? They get drunk. They get hungover. They get hurt. They wake up with a knee as big as the basketball, like you were telling us about, like some fool. And then at that moment, they say, I'm never going to do that again. But as soon as they sober up, and as soon as the next weekend comes, then they say, it'll be all right, right? They go and do it all again. Verse 35, they have stricken me, shalt thou say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. As a dog returneth to his vomit, so doth a fool to his folly. So that's why alcohol is said to be deceitful. Alcohol dulls the senses and the reason, and therefore it makes deception much easier. That's why deceivers like to use alcohol on other people to deceive them. Why do you think when you go to a casino, and I'm sure everybody here goes all the time, right? But why do you think if you've ever been to a casino, why do you think that they offer free drinks, right? Why is that? Because they're generous people and they just like to be nice, right? Of course not, right? They want to get you to keep gambling. Because you know what happens when you gamble? The house always wins. Remember that. The house always wins. In the long run, you could get lucky and win the first time, or you could get lucky and win after a few rounds and make a bunch of money. But if you keep at it long enough, the house always wins. Anybody that's a gambler needs to take a course in statistics. If he understands statistics, that discipline of mathematics, he won't be a gambler anymore. Because you're going to lose. But just keep the drinks flowing, and then people don't have any any sense enough to stop. They don't realize what's going on. You ever go into a casino? You ever notice there's no windows in casinos usually? They don't want you to know what time of day it is. There are no clocks in casinos. I'm pretty sure I've been told that anyway. I don't spend a whole lot of time in them myself. When I say I don't spend a whole lot of time, I don't spend any time in them, except I have been in one occasionally for a restaurant or something when I was in Nevada. But anyway, the point is, though, they are set up in such a way to keep you there, and the alcohol is part of that. Why do you think sleazy salespeople take clients out for free drinks? Why do you think they buy them drinks when they take them out, right? Because it dulls the senses, right? And it makes people a lot more accepting of maybe a proposition that they wouldn't normally have just jumped on. But, you know, when you get a few drinks in them, sounds good to me. End up signing on that dotted line. Or why do you think worldly men take women out to the bar and buy them drinks? Or when they're at the bar and they meet a woman at the bar, why do you think they buy them free drinks? It's an investment, right? They want something back and they're going to get a return on investment, right? But you have to get them drunk first so that they don't have enough sense to resist. That's why wine, alcohol, is deceitful. The answers to all these questions are the same. It's because it's more easy to coerce a victim into doing what you want them to do whenever you are using alcohol to help out the process. You always want to watch out for the guy that takes you out and says, "Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee." Proverbs 23 and verse 7. Says, "For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee." You watch out for that guy that's quick to want to buy you a drink. There's chances are, if he wants to buy you a drink, especially if you're not good friends, then he's probably trying to do something nefarious and get you to do something that you normally wouldn't do. Now, there's another method of deception, and that is the allure of quick success. This can be very deceitful, and marketers use this tactic all the time, right? I've been involved in internet marketing for a while now, or I've been interested in internet marketing, and then because of that, I get ads tailored to me when I'm on the internet for YouTube or whatever from internet marketers, and most of these guys, they're shooting this video and they're walking by this Lambo, you know, and they're walking into this great big, you know, 6,000 square foot house and everything's beautiful. And I was poor living in a cardboard box, you know, 9 months ago. And now look at me. And right, it's these rags to riches stories. And I don't know. I mean, who knows? They may have rented the Lambo for all I know. And he may be walking around in some rich neighborhood and he doesn't even live there. I don't know. Who knows? They could be just total liars. But even if they're telling you the truth, that allure of quick success is very deceitful because you'll start overlooking all kinds of things when you're like, "Oh man, I can just do what he did. I'm going to have the Lambo," right? Look at Matthew 23 and verse 22, where the Bible here teaches us that riches are deceitful. Matthew 13 and verse 22. Says, "He also that received seed among the thorns is he that heareth the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful." This is the one of the different hearers there in the parable of the sower. But really all I wanted to get from that text is the fact that riches are called deceitful. There is deceitfulness in riches because they can trick you. Riches can, the desire for riches can cause you to do things that you wouldn't normally do. They can deceive you. Now, the thing is about using deceit, it's sweet at first. It does afford sometimes some temporary benefits. But then in the long run, you end up becoming, it's a bitter experience once you get found out. And Proverbs teaches this in Proverbs 20 and verse 17. So if somebody's trying to get you to bite on whatever they're selling and offering you this quick success, this, you know, you're going to be able to make a lot of money off of this, and that temptation is there, and they end up deceiving you into jumping on that, You can get maybe a temporary high, but then in the end, it's not going to turn out so well a lot most times. Proverbs 20 and verse 17 says, "Bread of deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth shall be filled with gravel." And the guy that deceives you, right? Whenever somebody uses deceit to deceive you, it's sweet at first, but then afterwards, it's not going to be so sweet. You know, whenever you're ripping people off or trying to get them to buy into something that's ultimately not going to be successful, it works out well at first because you get paid, right? And people are initially maybe happy. But then whenever it doesn't work out the way that you promised it to work out because you deceived somebody, then your belly's filled with gravel. Then all of a sudden that sweet-tasting morsel turns into be botulism or something. The deceitful worker will sometimes achieve fleeting success, but the honest man is always going to win out in the long run. Look at Proverbs 11 and verse 18. Kind of reminds me of that verse which says that in all labor there is profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury. I don't think that's the one. I was thinking of another one. It's escaping me now anyway. But honest hard work always pays off in the long run. Proverbs 11 and verse 18 says, "The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward." Right, so you see the distinction here, the difference being set up here between working a deceitful work and sowing righteousness. When you do something deceitful, yeah, you can maybe have temporary success. But whenever you do good, hard, honest work, the reward is sure. It will eventually come whenever you do the right thing. And we always want to beware of people that try to entice us into doing something criminal with a promise of gain. We looked at this in Proverbs chapter 1 here a while ago when we were going through Proverbs chapter 1 in the Bible studies. And at that time, we talked about how this works, and we talked about some examples of how this could play out in today's world. And like the mafia or gangs or something like that, people that try to get you to come in with the promise of gain and, you know, try to get you to do evil things and join in with them. Proverbs 1, 10 through 13 says, "My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause, let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil." Beware the people that try to entice you with the promise of some great riches that we can make if we just kill people, if we just rob people, right? If we just do something fraudulent, if we just cut corners and break contracts or whatever we have to do, trick and deceive people. Be careful. Beware of people like that. Proverbs 16, verses 29 through 30. Proverbs 16, 29 through 30. "A violent man enticeth his neighbor and leadeth him into the way that is not good. He shutteth his eyes to devise froward things, moving his lips, he bringeth evil to pass." So there's that idea of enticement, which enticement is tied to deception. Right, because you're making the offer seem so good, and it's really you have this desire that you really want to do it. That's how the deception is accomplished. So just to sum up that point, beware of anybody that's offering you quick success to make money quickly or to make money without doing anything. You don't have to do anything. Just buy into this program, click a couple of buttons, and the money's going to roll in. If it was that easy, everybody would do it, right? So be very careful of any get-rich-quick schemes like that, because you're probably being deceived. You know the old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And then another method of deception is that wicked people will try to deceive the righteous by telling them that their leader is trying to deceive them. So it's kind of like this convoluted thing where the deceiver is trying to tell you that the guy that you're following is actually deceiving you, and he's trying to deceive you into thinking you're being deceived when you're not being deceived. Think about that one. 2 Kings 18:28-30. I've made reference to this here a few weeks ago, I think. So I'm just going to read you a few verses here to refresh your memory. This is when the king of Syria or Assyria, forget which one it was, sent his guy Rabshakeh to Hezekiah's people, to the Jews, and was trying to get them to believe that Hezekiah was the one that was deceiving them when it was really this reprobate Rabshakeh which was trying to deceive them. 2 Kings 18:28-30. Then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice in the Jews' language and spake, saying, Hear the word of the great king, the king of Assyria. There you go. It was Assyria, not Syria. Thus saith the king, let not Hezekiah deceive you. For he shall not be able to deliver you out of his hand, neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, The Lord will surely deliver us, and this city shall not be delivered into the hands of the king, into the hand of the king of Assyria. So he's saying, don't let Hezekiah deceive you. The deceiver is trying to tell the people that they're being deceived by a good, honest leader that was not deceiving them. So you just want to watch out for that. You know, everybody that is called a deceiver is not necessarily a deceiver. And I'll talk about that here in a little bit. So the way to avoid being deceived by this means is to not even engage in a conversation with somebody like that. If you know that you have a good leader and he's not deceiving you and you know this guy, and then some other guy comes along and says, oh, you can't believe that guy, he's a deceiver, right? Just don't even listen to the guy. Don't pay attention to him. Don't give him an ear. 2 Kings 18:36. But the people held their peace and answered him not a word, for the king's commandment was saying, answer him not. That's commendable on their part. Don't answer this guy. Answer not a fool according to his folly, right? So they listened to the king, and by not giving ear to that, then they weren't deceived by the deceiver. Proverbs teaches us this in about three different verses here, that we should not listen to instruction that leads us away from the truth. Proverbs 14:7. Proverbs 14:7. Go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. Now this could be a guy that's trying to deceive you, or it could just be a foolish, stupid person that you're arguing with, and you don't really have any worry about being deceived by the guy, but he's just going to waste your time. And whenever somebody shows himself to be a foolish person and he doesn't have the lips of knowledge, stop wasting your time with him. It doesn't make any sense. The only time that would ever make sense is if it was in some kind of a public forum, maybe, where there's a bunch of other people watching and listening and other people could learn from the exchange. Then it might make sense. But if you're arguing with some dude on Facebook or on YouTube or something, and there is no audience out there, and it's just the two of you, you're wasting your time. Go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. And I've had to learn this lesson the hard way over the years. I don't do this kind of thing anymore. But I used to get into plenty of discussions and arguments with people in the YouTube comments, and most of it's a total waste of time. Proverbs 19:27. It says, Cease, my son, to hear the instruction that causeth to err from the words of knowledge. So don't listen to heresy. Especially the more young in the faith you are, the less you should listen to that kind of stuff. Because if you don't know enough, and if you don't have discernment built up, then you can be deceived because you just don't know enough. And like a good smooth talker can make almost anything seem reasonable to somebody who's not well schooled and well versed in it. I guarantee you, I would never do this, but I could take somebody out there, somebody that doesn't know much about the Bible, and I could teach them Arminianism and they would believe it. I guarantee it. I mean, there's so many verses that you could misconstrue. It would be a cakewalk. Or any other false doctrine out there. It'd be really easy to do that to somebody that doesn't know enough. And you make it sound totally convincing and leave out all the stuff that opposes what you're teaching, false teaching. And there are false teachers out there that do that. So you want to be really careful with that. Proverbs 17 and verse 4. It says, a wicked doer giveth heed to false lips, and a liar giveth ear to a naughty tongue. So that does not sit well with you if you give heed to false lips. If you give heed to a deceiver or to somebody that's lying, well, that makes you about as wretched as the guy that's doing the lying. Remember what it says there in the end of Proverbs or Romans chapter 1, that they which do such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them, right? If we have pleasure in sinners, in their sin, then we're just as guilty as they are of it. Another thing the wicked will try to do is get us to think that God is deceiving us by believing that God will save us. 2 Kings 19 and verse 10. So they'll try to get you to believe that your leader is deceiving you, and then they'll call into question the Lord and his promises that you believe in. And especially if things aren't going so well for you, it's pretty easy when you take somebody and they've fallen on hard times, or something horrible's happened to them, or they've gotten really sick, or they've contracted some kind of a disease, or they've lost their job, or whatever, and then go to that person and say, oh, you still trust in the Lord, huh? Oh, the Lord's going to provide for all your needs, huh? Oh, the Lord's going to heal your sicknesses and your diseases, huh? Really? This is what deceivers do. 2 Kings 19 and verse 10, thus shall ye speak to Hezekiah, king of Judah, saying, let not thy God in whom thou trustest deceive thee, saying, Jerusalem shall not be delivered into the hand of the king of Assyria. This is the same guy that was trying to convince the people that Hezekiah was a deceiver. Now he's trying to convince Hezekiah that God is a deceiver. You can't trust the Lord to protect you, this guy is trying to tell Hezekiah. Now, God might allow something like this to happen to us just to test our faith. He might allow hard times to come, and then he might allow some skeptic to come along and start to question your faith in God and start to question God's faithfulness. Well, if God said these things, is he really trustworthy? Because, boy, you're falling on hard times right now, and, you know, he said that the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it, Proverbs, right? You're not rich. You're not exactly happy right now. What's that mean? God's lying. God's not telling you the truth. His word's not true. See how they do it? They don't bother to tell you the other verses that says that God puts his people through trials and temptations to burn off the wood, hay, and the stubble, right? And to ultimately do you good in your latter end. And you know, they don't tell you about those kind of things. They're just trying to get you to question your faith in God. But you're always going to be safe when you put your trust in the Lord. Proverbs 29 and verse 25. God let Israel go through deprivation to see what was in them, to see if they would trust him or no, and to ultimately do them good in their latter end. I think that is in Deuteronomy chapter 8, as I remember. But anyway, Proverbs 29 and verse 25. It says, the fear of man bringeth a snare, but whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe. It's always a safe bet to put your trust in the Lord. And don't listen to anybody that's going to try to question God's faithfulness in your life because of some circumstances that you're going through. If we trust in the Lord, we will never be ashamed. Look at Romans chapter 10 and verse 11. It says, for the scripture saith, whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed. Nope, you believe on him and then do what he says, and you're not going to be ashamed. If you believe on him and then go out there and do something horrible and get drunk and run around naked or something and everybody sees you, you're going to come to shame, right? You say, well, I believed in the Lord and look what happened. I was put to shame. Well, no, you weren't put to shame because you believed in the Lord. You were put to shame because you didn't believe on him and you didn't listen to what he said. So you got to, you know, of course, believe and then do if you don't want to be ashamed. Now, another thing that deceivers will do is that they will bear false witness against an innocent man to deceive others into believing that he's guilty. This is a form of deception, of course, whenever you try to convince people that an innocent man is guilty, and there are people out there that will do that. You remember, I'm not going to turn to the passage, but you remember the guy named Naboth, the Jezreelite? Naboth had the vineyard. King Ahab wanted the vineyard. It was right built up next to his house. And Ahab offered him to buy it off of him, and Naboth wouldn't sell it to him because that was his portion of land that was given to him, and he wasn't allowed to give it up. And Ahab was upset about that. He was throwing a little tantrum. His wife asked him what's going on, and he tells him it's this Naboth, he won't give me this vineyard. And Jezebel says, oh, I got an idea. So she goes out there, and she puts Naboth on trial, lifts him up on high, and then brings in false witnesses and accuses Naboth. And they end up putting that guy to death. They suborned witnesses. This is what wicked people will do. Let me give you an example. Proverbs 24 and verse 28. Just remember that if you ever get brought into court, it says in Proverbs that every man seeketh the... But his judgment cometh from the Lord. I'm trying to think of the first part. Every man seeks the ruler's favor, but his judgment comes from the Lord, roughly anyway. So don't put your faith in the judge up there with the gavel. You seek the Lord when you go into that court of justice because you just never know what might happen. Proverbs 24 and verse 28 says, be not a witness against thy neighbor without cause, and deceive not with thy lips. So when they did that to Naboth, they were deceiving, right? They were bearing false witness. They did the same thing to our Lord Jesus Christ. Matthew chapter 26 and verse 59. Matthew 26, 59 through 61. It says, now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came two false witnesses and said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. And the high priest arose and said unto him, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? But Jesus held his peace. So they suborned witnesses, brought in men to accuse him of false things that he didn't do or say. They did the same thing to Stephen in Acts chapter 6 and verse 11. Acts chapter 6 and verse 11. Whenever they can't argue against you, then they just lie about you. This is how wicked people operate. They charge you with things falsely. And then it's up to you to prove that you're not guilty. We're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, but in a lot of times, and especially in the public's eye, you're pretty well guilty until proven innocent. I mean, think about it. How many times do you hear in the news about somebody being arrested for something, and what is your first thought? Well, obviously he did it, right? But remember, innocent until proven guilty. Sometimes innocent people are arrested for maybe it's just accidentally, right? It just looked like the guy just, you know, the circumstances looked as if he was guilty, but there's an explanation that he wasn't, right? Or sometimes it's just corruption. Cops are corrupt, right? They plant evidence and things like that. They do that sometimes. So you don't ever want to just assume that somebody's guilty. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Acts 6 and verse 11. It says, and they suborned men which said, "We heard him speak blasphemous words against Moses and against God." To suborn means to bribe or unlawfully procure a person to make accusations or give evidence or to induce to give false testimony. So they bribed these guys. They actually paid them off to get up there and say, "Oh, we heard him say these blasphemous things against Moses and against God." Stephen never said any such thing. Now, that kind of thing, that would make you want to fret right there. You know, I'll tell you, if I was brought into court or brought up on charges and I knew that people were lying about me and they just made stuff up, that would cause you to get a little bit angry, you know, a little bit bitter. And you just have to give that to God and just say, "I know what I did. I know what I said or didn't say," and just trust that the Lord will take care of the situation. And you know what? What did Jesus do whenever he had witnesses suborned against him and they lied about him and accused him falsely? What did he do? Hire a lawyer? No. Represent himself? No. You know what he did? Nothing. He didn't say anything. So don't always feel like you have to defend yourself. Sometimes the worst thing you can do is defend yourself. Especially, it just depends on what the accusation was, who made it, what the circumstances are. But sometimes it's not worth defending yourself because to even answer the charge is giving credence to it. Just pay no attention. Don't answer it. Ignore them. That'll drive people crazy. They hate it when you do that. Now, if this happens to us, we're in good company, especially if it's because of our religion or because of our righteousness. Look at Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. Jesus said, "Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you." So if you are persecuted for righteousness' sake, if you do have all manner of evil said against you falsely for Christ's sake, then we should be happy about that. We should be glad. Because we're being treated just like the prophets were, just like Jesus and the apostles were. That always makes me happy. I don't know, it's almost like the nastier, the better. Because I'm kind of in the unique position where I've got all these YouTube videos out there and people leave all these horrible comments and call me the devil and all kinds of things. I really should start keeping a list of these things. It would be kind of interesting to... I haven't done that. But anyway, it's like the worse the better. Just makes me happy. And then one more thing on this point. That righteous and innocent men will sometimes be slandered and called deceivers when they're not. Our Lord Jesus was an example of this. Matthew 27 and verse 63. Matthew 27 and verse 63. This is after he was already crucified. Saying, "Sir, we remember that that deceiver said, while he was yet alive, after 3 days, I will rise again." They're calling Jesus a deceiver. Now, of course, we know that Jesus was no deceiver. There was no guile found in his mouth, which guile is deceit, right? He never deceived anybody. But what I find interesting about this passage, just to chase a little wee rabbit, is that they said, "We remember that he said after 3 days he would rise again." These are his enemies. These are not believers. And they remembered that he said he would rise 3 days later. But the disciples, when he told them plainly to the face that he would be crucified and raise again 3 days later, they didn't understand what he was saying, nor did they believe it, because whenever the witnesses came to them saying that the Lord has risen from the dead, they didn't believe them, and Jesus upbraided them for their hardness of heart and for their unbelief. His own disciples didn't remember and didn't believe what he said about rising from the dead 3 days later, but his enemies did. You see how pathetic sometimes we Christians can be? That unbelievers can remember more of the Word of God sometimes than we can. It's pretty pathetic. Look at 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 8. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 8. Paul says, by honor and dishonor, by evil report and good report, as deceivers, yet true. This was their reputation as apostles, as deceivers. Now, of course, there's that word there, as deceivers. They weren't deceivers, but people viewed them that they were deceivers. They appeared to be deceivers by some people, but they weren't. So just remember this when you hear somebody being called a deceiver, that not everybody that is accused of deceit is a deceiver. I've been called a deceiver many, many times online, of course by people that don't know me and probably haven't listened to hardly anything that I've ever said. But just, you want to watch out for that. Not everyone that's accused of one, of being one, is one. Now I want to look at the motivations for deception. And I have three of them here. I'm sure there's plenty more, but there are three of them here that I found in the scripture that I wanted to cover with you. The first motivation for people to deceive somebody else is that they want to get information out of us that they can use against us. Now, this example that I'm going to give you here in 2 Samuel 3 and verse 25 was actually spoken falsely against a guy named Abner, but I just wanted to get the idea behind this that sometimes there really are people that deceive to get information out of somebody. 2 Samuel 3 and verse 25. It says, thou knowest Abner, the son of Ner, that he came to deceive thee, and to know thy going out and thy coming in, and to know all that thou doest. This is Joab speaking to King David. He's trying to get David to think that Abner's like, you know, some kind of a fifth column there or something. That was it? Yeah, that Abner was trying to deceive him, and you know, get the best of him or something. That he would have this inside information about David that he could then use against him or something. Abner was not doing this, but my point is that there are people that do that. So you want to watch out for people like that whenever they're trying to gather information and they're asking you a bunch of questions. And, you know, just be a little bit careful, especially if a stranger starts asking you all kinds of strange questions that you really can't think, like, why are they asking me all this stuff? Why are they so interested in whatever this thing is they're asking you about? They may be trying to gather information to be able to use against you. And then there's this one, number two, that men will sometimes use deceit to hide their true intentions in order to manipulate others into putting themselves in a position of vulnerability so that they can do them harm. And this is classic war tactics, right? I mean, the nature of deceit is the nature of war. That's how war is fought. You make the enemy think you're doing one thing when you're doing another, right? If you think you're going to be a successful general by saying, hey, I'm never going to try to deceive anybody, you're going to lose every battle, right? You've got to deceive people in war. That's how wars are fought, right? You build up a force coming in here on land on the east, and then you have ships sitting over here on the west waiting to attack whenever they start to head towards the east or the other way around or whatever. I mean, that's how it's done. There were some guys back there in the book of Genesis. There was a guy named Shechem, and he had fornicated with Jacob's daughter Dinah. And Jacob's sons were not happy about that. And Shechem wanted to marry Dinah. And he came there to talk to Jacob about that, he and his father. And Jacob's sons, they pulled a major deception over this guy's eyes. And the reason was that they wanted to do him ill. Look at Genesis 34 and verse 7. It says, and the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, because he had wrought folly in Israel in lying with Jacob's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. So they were very unhappy about this. And like I said, Shechem wanted to marry Dinah. And he and Hamor, his father, they went to Jacob. They proposed that he let Shechem marry her. And then they would give their daughters to Jacob's sons, and Jacob would give his daughters to their sons. They would, you know, they would all be one big happy family there. And that was found there in verse 8 through 12. I guess we'll just read that. And Hamor communed with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. I pray you give her to him, give her him to wife. And make ye marriages with us, and give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you, and ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possessions therein." And Shechem said unto her father, and unto her brethren, "Let me find grace in your eyes, that ye what ye shall say unto me, and I will give. Ask me never so much dowry in gift, and I will give according as ye shall say unto me, but give me the damsel to wife." And the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, deceitfully, and said, "Because he hath defiled Dinah, our sister." And they said unto them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for that were a reproach unto us." So I read there a couple of verses longer than I wanted to. So anyway, he goes to them, and they want to make this deal where they marry each other, and he's going to give them this big dowry, and you know, they're going to have a great deal. And Jacob's sons say that they will only consent to that if Shechem and Hamor and the whole family, if all the men get circumcised and become like the Jews, because they don't want to be giving their daughter to these uncircumcised heathen. These guys got to get circumcised, and then they would go ahead and go on with the deal. And we read there through verse 14 already. Let's just read down through verse 17. "But in this will we consent unto you, if ye will be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised, then will we give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if ye will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then we will take our daughter, and we will be gone." So they were offering a pretty hard bargain there, because Shechem really wants to marry Dinah. He wants to marry her so bad that the whole family will get circumcised and go through all that pain just so that he can have Dinah. So Hamor that's Shechem's father, he was deceived by them, he and his family, and they were circumcised according to the agreement. And I'm not going to read that whole passage there, but they go ahead and they went forward with it. But I do want you to notice one verse there, and that is verse 23. Hamor had a little bit of deceit in him as well. He says there in verse 23, "Shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us." You see, so Hamor is thinking, well, there's going to be something in this for us too. And he wasn't really putting forth this in the deal. I mean, the deal was, hey, we'll just get circumcised. We'll pay you a big dowry. You get our daughters. We get your daughters, right? And everything's going to be good. But he doesn't say, hey, you know, we're going to end up with a bunch of their cattle, a bunch of their substance. And he didn't tell them all this stuff, but in the back of his mind, he's thinking, we can really stand to benefit here from this deal. So let's just go ahead and get circumcised, and, you know, we'll get the outward deal, but then we're also going to get a whole lot more that these stupid Jews don't realize that we're going to get. So he's got a little bit of deceit in him, too. See, he thought he was going to gain from the deal in more ways than were just simply agreed to. And greed will cloud our judgment, and it'll make us far easier to be deceived by a deceiver. See, because what Hamor doesn't realize is he's the one being deceived, but he thinks, we're going to get one over on the sons of Jacob here. We're going to benefit from this. And what he doesn't realize is that his greed, wanting to deceive them, led into his own deception, blinded his eyes. He didn't really think carefully about what was happening. He just went ahead with it because he thinks there's really something in it for him. So what happened was, on the third day after they were circumcised and they were sore and they're unable to defend themselves well, then Simeon and Levi, they go in and they kill Hamor and Shechem and all the men. They killed them all, and then they took the women for themselves. So, you know, they kept half the bargain anyway. They did take their daughters for their wives, right? They just killed them and didn't give them their daughters, right? So they kind of kept half the deal, I suppose you'd say. And that was in verses 25 through 29. I'm not going to read that. I just summarized it there for you. But you want to let this be a warning to us, that if you have offended somebody and they offer to forgive you only if you put yourself in a weak position, beware. Right? Oh, I'll forgive you, but you have to do this, this, and this, or you really owe me one, or something. All these conditions upon the forgiveness. Be really careful about that. Or I'll forgive you, but if you ever do anything, I'm going to tell everybody about this. You know, some kind of a blackmail thing or whatever. Something like that. You want to be really careful about something like that, because that person is probably trying to deceive you so that they can harm you. If a deal seems too good to be true, it probably is. And also, remember what happened to Hamor. Don't make a decision based on greed or a perceived benefit that you will get at the expense of the person who is offering you a sweetheart deal. Somebody offers you this awesome deal, and you think, oh, yeah, I'm going to take it. This guy doesn't have any idea, and boy, I'm going to make out like a bandit on this thing. If he's offering you a sweetheart deal, he's probably already figured out he's going to make out like a bandit on you. And if you're stupid enough to think that you're the one that's going to end up getting one over on him, chances are you've been had. All right? So be really careful about that, having your discernment blinded by greed. And then lastly, the last motivation for deception that I'm going to cover anyway, is that wicked men will deceive in order to become rich and powerful. And this is probably the most obvious one. Why do people like to deceive other people? To get rich, right? To make money. And this kind of thing happens all the time. A lot of times it's short-lived, because if you're in a free market economy and you deceive people into buying something that's not what you say it is, yeah, you might get rich to start with, but eventually word gets around and then, you know, you end up going out of business. I'll just give you here a few verses that show us that people deceive to get rich, as if you didn't know that already. Jeremiah 5 and verse 27 says, as a cage is full of birds, so are their houses full of deceit. Therefore they are become great and waxen rich. See, it works for a while. Wicked people get away with robbery and theft and fraud and those kind of things. They get away with it for a while. Their houses are full. They're great. They're rich. But remember, it won't go well with them forever. Look at Hosea 12 and verse 7. This is speaking of Ephraim. Didn't have a very good reputation at this point. It says, he is a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hand. He loveth to oppress. Why was he deceitful? To get rich. Kind of makes me think about this corona thing, right? Look at all the money that some of these people have to stand to make with these vaccines that they're going to be pushing out. And then Amos 8:5. And by the way, guess who now is the vacciner in chief now? Our president, Donald Trump. He's the one that's pushing for them now. I just saw an interview with him the other day, and he was talking about how they want to, it's like called Operation Warp Speed or something like that, where he wants to fast track this thing. I mean, we got to get this thing out now, and the government's full force behind it. Yeah, boy, that's something I want to inject into my body. Let me tell you what, whenever they're going to force it through as fast as they possibly can and not do the trials that are needed and the tests and all that stuff, that's just what I want to get, which is not what I'm going to get. And then they asked him, well, who's in charge of this thing? He's like, well, you know, to be honest, I am. He just flat out said it. I'm in charge of this thing. You can look it up for yourself. I'm not making it up. So now Trump is the one that's pushing this vaccine. Now, of course, everybody's going to get it because Trump's a wonderful guy. I mean, he would never have any ill will towards any of us or anything. He's such a wonderful guy. Amos 8 and verse 5. I'm beginning to think, by the way, on that topic, I'm not going to vote for it myself, but I think we just need Democrats in the Congress and the White House from here on out, because you know what? Democrats want to do a bunch of bad stuff, but then Republicans wake up from their stupor and then they resist it. I don't think this would have happened if there'd be a Democrat in the White House. I don't think people would have put up with that. I think it's probably better. I mean, look at all the George W. Bush lying us into those wars and all that stuff. Everybody falling for it. And it just seems like, you know, Obama, yeah, he got Obamacare passed, I guess. He did get some things done. But you know what? He didn't get half the stuff done that Trump's able to get accomplished or that Bush is able to get accomplished. Because decent people resist it then. So I don't know. Anyway, Amos 8 and verse 5. Saying, when will the new moon be gone, that we may sell corn, and the Sabbath, that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsifying the balances by deceit? So yes, they are using deceit to get rich. A lot of marketing tactics are deceitful, such as, you ever go to like a website and they'll have this countdown timer on there, and it's, you know, get it now while it lasts, it's only going to be here for another day or two or whatever. And then if you're like me, you think, oh, okay, let's see. You go back out, you clear the cookies, you go back to the same site, and the timer has started over at the beginning where it was. Huh, isn't that interesting? Or using false scarcity to make the customers act urgently, right? There's only three of these things left. Then after you buy one, there's still three left. You must have just got a new one. New shipment must have came in of one item as soon as you bought one, you know? Or posting the normal price as the sale price, right? Christian businessmen should never use these kind of tactics to increase sales. It does increase sales, and it works. If it didn't work, they wouldn't do it. But that's one reason why when I tried an e-commerce store here a few years ago, I think that's one reason why I wasn't successful, because I wouldn't use all the deceitful tactics and, you know, with false scarcity and all that kind of stuff. I just wouldn't do that. So anyway, that takes care of the motivations for deception. So just remember, if somebody's asking you a bunch of questions, trying to get information out of you, beware, be a little bit cautious. They might be being a little too friendly for some reason. They may be trying to get information to use against you. And then remember, if somebody is willing to give you some kind of a sweetheart deal or something like that, you might want to look beyond that to see if there's maybe something else going on there, or if you did think that this deal is going to be so good for you and it's so heavily weighted towards me and I'm really, boy, this is great, this guy's offering this to me because he has no idea how well I'm going to do on this deal. Just remember, he's probably not a fool, and he's probably offering this sweetheart deal to you as something deceitful. He's trying to get you to take the bait, so remember that. And then remember that wicked people use deceit to get rich and powerful. And I guess what I want to tell you about that is, don't be one of them. You know, we know it's out there. We know people do that, but we don't want to act like that. So next time we'll continue with this study on deception, Lord willing.